Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Bigfoot Live. You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardner, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found that 12th crashing ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. Jim, he's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, convinced them I had to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. And now everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher.
This is Marco Bill, and TJ, Tom, and the team are on a travel for expedition right now. They're en route. We're going to have them on the air, and expedition season is upon us, July through August. So you got to send us your sightings. Here are the states that we're going to definitely be in: Washington, Montana, Arizona, Oklahoma, Maine, Mississippi, New Hampshire, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Rhode Island, and Utah. Now join us finding Bigfoot with the Searching for Bigfoot team. We need your eyes and ears, folks. Do you know, or have you heard of any Bigfoot sightings, activity, evidence, or stories in these areas? Please call TJ, our live capture team leader, at 606-620-6667. That's 606-620-6667 for Texas, the East Coast, well, actually for anything. Or you can also call Tom, the godfather of Bigfoot, at 415-518-8494. That's 415-518-8494. Well, the Bigfoot Hotline is available 24 hours a day, folks. And it works. We answer the phone every single time. We'll be right on it. Give us a call if you have anything going on. Well, first of all, tonight I'd like to welcome TJ. TJ, how are you?
Hey, Marco, I'm doing real well. Outstanding. Don't get no better than this. You know, expedition season here, and, you know, nothing better than getting out on the road and visiting people we've talked to in the last month or so and checking out their sightings and learning what's going on and getting information from new people. Don't forget to give us a call. And what was that third number, Marco? Wasn't there a number for they can get a hold of you also?
Yes.
Get that one out.
Marco Bill, 760-402-2537. That's 760-402-2537. Now, these numbers are also written on the Searching for Bigfoot webpage and on Facebook and several other places. It'll also be on our website. So anytime you need to do it, just go up to the website or the Searching SFBI webpage, any of them, and they'll have those numbers in there for you, the hotline numbers, okay? Well, Tom, TJ, tonight we're going to do a little bit different. We're going to go back to April of 2014 while the SFBI team was on expedition in Rockwell, Texas.
That's right.
And we had a guy by the name of Jesse of Georgia, and I interviewed him during the show after we did with the guests, we had the actual field, out in the field report from Tom and from everybody there, right? So I interviewed Jesse in Georgia, and he had some unbelievable things. I mean, you won't believe this. Very few people, I think, have probably heard this. It's one of those rare occasions. And anyway, what I'd like to do, if I can, I go out there. When we come back, it's about 20 minutes. When we come back, we'll get back to with you and the SFBI team in Rockwell, and we go over some of the things that took place in Rockwell at the time.
Let's do it.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, you know, the little button's working here. And here we go.
We're going to go out here to Alabama, and we're going to talk to our friend Jesse. Jesse, how are you tonight?
Man, how are you? I want to thank you for letting me come on your show and tell my experiences of what happened to me over the years.
Well, we appreciate you coming on the show, Jesse. Tell you what. Let's go back to some of your first experiences and just kind of work your way up to the present day. How's that?
That's fine. I'll give you my first one.
Sure.
I was about 12. A cousin and he was walking through a neighbor's old grown-up field, and it's got what we call sage straw growing up in it. And when we was walking through there, something like a horse I heard jump up off the ground, and my cousin stuck his arm in my back and hollered, "Run, run, run, run." So I didn't know I heard something, but I didn't know what it was, you know. But I took off running, and I didn't know where he was holding onto my back or pushing me as we was running. And we ran about 1/16 of a mile probably. And the neighbor had a big fence, a rabbit wire over it, and he went over it like a squirrel going up a tree. And I didn't see anything, you know, so I clumb over it, and I asked him when I got on the other side, I said, "What was he running from?" He said, "I don't know what it was." I said, "It was a big old hang monkey about 8 foot tall." I said, "A what?" I've never heard of no Sasquatches or nothing like that, you know. And he said, "Yes," that it was a big old hairy monkey about 8 foot tall. But all I heard on that encounter that time was just like a horse jumped up off the ground and said, "Boo, boo, boo." And that's all I heard. And he saw it, but, you know, I didn't. Then my next encounter was an actual sighting of probably 10 foot from me. Me and a girlfriend was in a subdivision that they was a building, and it hadn't, the road hadn't been paved or anything, and we was parked out there one night, and we was laying out in some pine trees where the pine straw had fell real thick and all on the ground. We was laying there on the ground, and I wasn't making nothing about no Bigfoot or nothing like that. That was entirely not on my mind. So this thing was a hollering up in the woods, and before we went up to where we was at, and she asked me what it was, and I said, I don't know. I've never heard nothing like that. I heard a lot of strange things because I always lived in the country. So anyway, we was laying there, and it come up beside of us, about 15 foot away from us. I saw it coming up, and it was all slunched over, swinging its arms, and its arms looked down just about past its knees. Then it turned and walked directly in front of us where our feet was at, looked straight, stood up, looked straight down at us, and just stared for just a few seconds, turned back around, and walked off into the woods. And when it was about 50 foot away, I looked at her and I said, what in the world was that? She said, I don't know, let's get out of here. So we left. We got in the car and we shined the lights all around in the air. We couldn't see no trace of it whatsoever. And that was my second encounter of it. So on the years going on, you know, and this is coming straight down in a sort of a straight line over the years. And then I moved on the back side of where we originally lived from, further south. And me and my wife was coming home one night, and it was a odd 9-10 o'clock at night. And this big dark shadow run across the road in front of us, and it turned and went off down through in the swampland. So when we got on down the road about less than a quarter of a mile and pulled into our house, we heard it sound like a horse going through the woods behind the house. And that was a third encounter that we've had on it. And then I've had some sightings of things that it done about 3 years ago across from my house. Me and my grandson, we go out and hit huckleberries and, you know, just eat them, just walking through the woods and eating them. And we come up on a huckleberry tree about, I guess it was 10, 11 foot tall, and there was about six trees that had the tops broke out of them right there, just right there around that thing, broke out about 6 foot tall of the tops and broke out of them. And, well, I got to looking around, and I found one footprint in a little muddy swag there, and it had like one of its toes was broken coming out on the side, and the footprint was probably 15, 16 inches long, you know, in about that range. I didn't measure it, but I figured it was, you know, somewhere in that range. And then this year, I done some clearing behind my house, and I got to noticing a big maple. The tree was about the size of a 5-gallon bucket, and it had limbs up in the top of it that was about the size of a big size peach skin that they sell peaches in, you know. And the limbs was broke off. So I said, well, what about that? And I said, there's been no wind. So I walked over and I looked at it. And I said, I don't know what now that was. So I said, well, I'll go out this other way and go on this power line right here. So I walked away from where the tree was and started out toward the power line. Well, here I come up on two trees that something had got between, pushed them apart down on the ground, and it had footprints and the handprints on the trees all around it. And there was one left foot where it put it on one tree, and where he held it with the other hand on the other tree while he tried to push that one down. There were four trees pushed down going in different directions, so there was no wind that did that. And those are my encounters with, you know, I think it's following me around. And over the years, you know. I'm not afraid of it.
No.
I know it is.
It wasn't aggressive at any time towards you, was it?
Tell people about it, you know, they think you're crazy, you know, but we're not crazy because, like I said, that time that I would have encountered it when I had a girl there with me, it wasn't no monkey business on my mind about a monkey, you know, or whatever. And it was about, I think it was a female, it was about, the moon was real bright, and it was like one of the nights where you, it's almost daylight, it's a brat. And, it was about 4 foot across the shoulders, had a big old flat nose, had a big mouth, big eyes, and had like a horned owl, the feathers that grows out of horned owls, eyebrows that come up, you know, up off of it.
Uh-huh.
And it had a V neckline. And it was gray or white, I don't know, you know, where it was gray or white, because it was, like I said, it was, you know, not that time, but it was real bright. And I don't know if it was black, red, or brown, but I did, you know, I could distinguish what it looked like, but I couldn't, you know, tell colors, other than the white or the gray on its chest there. But I, like I said, I think it was female.
Well, now, when you... when you described this, it was about about an 8 foot creature, huh?
Yeah, it was about 8 foot, and it weighed probably 450 somewhere along in there, 500. It couldn't went over that.
I understand. And then, looked like a kind of like a football player with a shoulder pads on, no neck.
His head was like shoved down in his shoulders, you know, and it was a real hefty deal, you know. It's like you just stuck a football helmet on a big, broad football player and right on his neck.
When you described the face, that was kind of interesting as well. Now, was the face hairy?
It had hair on its face. But it wasn't completely hair, you know.
Right. It just had hair on it.
Yeah, and it was still hair, you know.
And it was kind of more human looking.
I don't know about that now.
If you look at an ape is kind of like a snout and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You look at a chimpanzee still has that kind of a snout.
Yeah.
A flat face, but it's kind of a stout, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, this one had a flat face, you know, and it didn't look like a orangutan. It didn't look like
what I mean by human, it's, in other words, it wasn't an ape-looking creature. It was more human-looking, but a flat face kind of a thing, right?
Similar to something like that, but it wasn't human.
But it has its own, obviously it has its own.
Yeah. Yeah.
Its own features, yes.
Yeah, it wasn't human. I don't know what it is, but it was.
No, I understand. He also described the arms, and that the arms were like past the knees.
They were down past the knees, and it slouched over and swung them as it walked.
Right.
And it walked in a strad like.
Yeah.
And it didn't take it long. When it walked in front of us, then just 3 or 4 steps, it was 50, 60 feet away from us. I mean, it was gone.
Yeah, it go pretty fast.
Yeah, it didn't run or nothing. It just walked off, you know.
No, it has a very large gait.
Yeah, that's what I say. Stride was, you know, a long stride, and, you know. But, like I said, I'm not afraid of it. I know it exists.
It wasn't aggressive at any time when you seen it, right?
No, like I said, the first time that, when me and my cousin seen it, or he seen it. When it jumped up out of that, it was asleep laying there in that grass, and we walked right up on it.
Yeah, I've seen that. We've had reports of that before, where people have walked up on it, and it was sleeping and got within about 10 feet of it, and man, it took me, and it just scared the heck out of me and jumped up.
Yeah, that's what it does. It sounded like a horse to me, but like I said, I've never seen it, but I heard it when it jumped up, and boom, and if that would have wanted to stand, you know, been aggressive, it would have grabbed both of us and beat us in the ground right there.
Oh, yeah.
No way. You know, something that big you could have got away from.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it's...
One other question is, the most recent one, said that the trees were just snapped off at the top.
Oh, that was about 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, I understand.
Across the road, but my last sighting was one right here behind my house where it pushed the trees over, and it had footprints in the moss and footprints where it stomped the trees down, you know, mashed them down. It must have got mad at me because I went down there and cleared off all of that old undergrowth that was, you know, getting out around my trees. So I must have disturbed these food or something. I don't think you quite like what I done that time.
That was pretty neat.
I know it exists, and I know it's out there, and like these people that have these shows, goes out in the woods and meets on trees and screams and hollers, you're not going to ever find it like that.
Common sense tells you that, right?
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Especially if you got a full movie crew with lights and cameras.
Oh, yeah.
It's like they're going to come out of the woods and, put on a show for you.
you're not going to ever find it like that. If you're ever going to find it, this is where you're going to find it. It's a nocturnal creature.
You got it.
It only roams around in that, and that if you lucky enough to catch it in the daytime, it's like, you know, like boy with kid walked upon it while it was asleep. If you're lucky enough to see it, you'll never encounter it. I wouldn't never think so in the daytime unless it was, you know, desperately starving or something, you know, without having to get out in the daytime to find something to eat or something.
Sure.
But
what we think, Jesse, is this. We know it's nocturnal. Usually, in the hours, the premium hours that we've been researching here for the past 10 years has been about 10, 9, 10 o'clock at night to about 4 or 5 in the morning. And
the times that I saw it, the two times the shadow that I saw was about 9 or 10 o'clock.
Sure.
And it was about 9 or 10 o'clock when it walked up on us that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason that people see it during the day, we've got a lot of day sightings as well, but the reason they do is we believe that we don't know everything, as you may understand either. I mean, this is just based on our own conjecture, based on our own experience and information we've gotten from other people and what we've seen. And basically what we think is they usually hang around in family pods. In other words, they're not a solitary creature usually. They usually hang around in small family groups, anybody would, right?
Yeah. I've never, you know, encountered other than just that one that I actually saw and then the shadow. So, you know, I don't know about, you know, if they go in groups. But I know ever fall, they travel through certain areas, and that's their feeding grounds or their migration path or something.
You got it. Yes,
because
sir.
It started probably within a 5 or 6 mile straight from where I live at. All of the encounters I saw was, you know, about 5 miles away from me, and it's coming this way, you know, all of them. And then this one this year right behind my house, and I know that's what it was because, like I said, and it's fur on his feet and hands and all is acidy or something on their hands and feet. It killed every bit of the moss where it put its foot in the trees and made its perfect hands and footprints on.
Wow.
All of the stuff is gone, except for one tree that's been a laying away from the rain.
Yeah.
We got the footprint on it, and the footprint's about, I'd say, 15, 16 inches long.
That's about right, man.
Yeah, and I took a picture of it, you know, and I took pictures of another part where it had its hand on the other side, but it had already deteriorated enough to where it wasn't, so you could see it visibly with your eyes, but when I took a picture of it.
Yeah, it's hard to see. Well, it's hard to take a picture of some of that stuff, because in your eyes can determine that.
Yeah.
But when you try to take a picture of it, it doesn't necessarily come out as clear.
Well, you can see a perfect. I showed it to other people, you know, and you can see a perfect barefoot left foot.
Mm-hmm.
Where it had the ball of its foot, and then it went up the side of its foot, and then it shows the heel, the side of the bottom of your foot going up your heel. Then it showed the ball of your foot, and then it showed the toes. And then it even poured the toes come out of the ball of your foot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It even showed the divider there where it put its foot again and separated, you know, where it put its toe again. And it had a gap between its toe and the ball of its foot.
Sure.
I mean, it's perfect. It looked like you placed it on the tree there. And it was about 5 foot up in there because I'm a little, I used to be 5'11", but I've shrunk over the years.
Yeah.
And it's about come about right up to my neck, and that would have been about 5 foot. I'm about 5'7" now, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, I shrunk over the years. And, but it was up, you know, just about 5 foot off the ground, the foot and handprints, all of them, except for the ones where they stomped the trees over and stepped on them, mashed them down on the ground, but you know, it's out there. I'll go.
Yeah. I tell you what I'd like to do is, one, I'd like to thank you so much for coming on the show, and I'd like you to stay, if you don't mind.
Well, you know,
we're going
to
be
for you to let me come on and tell this, because I have no reason to lie about it.
No.
I want it found.
Sure.
To prove other people out there that called you crazy, you know, over the years, people don't really believe stuff until they actually see it, so.
Well, we got a kind of a special treat tonight. We have actually a report from the field. We have what we call our SFBI team, our Searching for Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Our incorporated team is out on expedition right now, and they're going to be doing a report right from the field where they're at. And they're going to be telling us about what's going on in their area. We also have two other guests that do research. They got the same as you. They started looking at things, and pretty soon they became a part of our Bigfoot family. And now they do full-time research on their own in their areas, and they give us a little report every week. What we'd like to do.
I think if I had a night vision camera when fall come, I could probably
eat.
I'm sure that thing's, you know, followed me all over for this many years.
I believe it. And what I was going to try to tell you before is, when we say that they hang around the family pond, that doesn't mean
either it lacks me or something. I don't know what it is.
Well, when we say they hang around the family pond, they hang around the family pond. However, they don't travel around where you're going to see them. Normally, they have what they call sentries.
They don't bother me. So.
No, they have what they call, like, sentries, right?
Yeah.
And they keep an eye on things and go around. And we've had instances where, we've had visual contact with one. And then when we got close to it, to where they thought they were in some sort of danger, they would throw large rocks. I think the rocks would come from the opposite side of where we had a visual on the other creature. And the rocks would not hit us, but they would come very close.
Yeah.
And that was a warning to us to get the heck out of Dodge and get away from it.
That's what I think this was here behind my house when I cleared off this the brush and all out around the trees here behind my house.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a warning down there, you know, that this is man, stay out of here.
Sure.
And that's what I think that part was, you know. I said, I don't think it would hurt you, you know. But,
normally not. I think the only time it would hurt anybody is like we would do.
If somebody threatened
our family or our, you know, our children or our family or something. Obviously, they protect us. Yeah. But one of the other things that you to be aware of is, you know, they make layers, which are, they take this branches and, of trees and things, and they make bedding areas out of it. They also,
I think around here,
snake man parasitic. It's also what they do, Jesse, is they, you'll see what they call, we call tree twists, okay?
Yeah.
And that, you'll see about 6 to 8 foot up, branches twisted.
Yeah, that's why these 4 or 5 up here, that like the top was just run down, and you know, it broke out. Wasn't broke all the way off, it just pitched the ground and broke.
Yep.
And there was about 4 or 5 of them right there. I guess because we was eating huckleberries, you know.
Sure.
Or the scale out of there. It won't mess with them.
Yep.
Well, I
want to thank you for coming on tonight. And also, I'd like to ask you to stay online and listen to the rest of the show. And at the very end of the show, we're going to have about a 10-minute period where everybody can ask questions. You can ask questions, or maybe somebody wants to ask you a question as well. Some of the other guests. Could you do that?
I'm going to have to let you go tonight because...
you got to get up early.
No, my mother. I got to get up. But my mother passed away when I talked to you yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
And... So, you know, I keep my word. When I tell you I'll do something, I'll do it. So
well, my friend, I'm sad of heart.
But.
Yeah, well, Jesse, I want to say we send out a big prayer for your mother. And we got a lot of people on here that'll send out some prayers and well wishes to you. I'll keep in contact with you. You can keep in contact with me anytime.
Okay, she had a wonderful life. She lived almost 100, so.
Well, that is pretty good. I just lost my parents here not too long ago, too.
Yeah.
And I know what you're going through. It's not an easy thing to lose your parents.
No, it's not. But I want to thank you, anyway, for letting me come on tonight. I've been, you know, been wanting to tell people this for years, but like I said, people out there shouldn't be afraid of this thing and shouldn't intimidate it. Just go and search for it.
Well, thank you much, Jesse.
All right. And you have a good evening.
You have a good night, and God bless, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, TJ, how are you? TJ, how about Rocky?
I'm sorry about that. Can you hear me now? That was an incredible story.
Yeah, wasn't it pretty good?
Wow. Now, if I'm correct, did Rocky get to talk to that gentleman? Did you guys get out to go see him? Or?
No, well, see, what I didn't know is his mother passed away the day before when I asked him to come on the program.
Right.
And he couldn't. But my intent was, to keep him on towards the end, and then towards the end of this episode, basically, we had the report from the field with all the SFBI team and everything on it. And, of course, what happened was Chico had gotten gored by a boar.
And it
tore his arm all the way down to the bone. And good old Swede and Rocky did the stitching, and Chico did the bitching, and Rocky did the stitching. And they stitched him up, and I can't believe it. Man, I mean, they did a really good job. And so it was something else. I mean, I couldn't believe everything that was going on. And plus, not only that, the team had just been in there the people at Rockwell, I guess, treated him fairly well. You know, gave him a lot of really, really treated him well as far as, you know, like kind of like at home. You know,
right.
Home cooking and all that good stuff. I mean, geez, unbelievable. And so anyway, that's kind of what happened. And, you know, Rocky, I mean, you could tell some more on some of that, right?
Yeah, the little incident with the hog, me and the Swede had been up all the night before, and we had the night vision one, and there were hogs everywhere. I mean, all over the field next to the area that we was checking out. And when we, I don't know, Chico was just walking through the brush, and the next thing we knew, you know, the hog come out, and it got him good. But anyhow, fortunately, me and the Swede had all kinds of first aid stuff, so we got him cleaned off, and then the Swede is an upholsterer, so he was able to close him up.
He's a bolster. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, it comes in handy.
Yeah.
He wanted me after I got split my head open here a while back. He wanted to come over and stitch my head up so he could get back at me for pulling his teeth.
I remember that.
But anyhow, while we were there, Chico, Fernando, Tom, and the Swede was walking down this little path, and they were talking about where they needed to put up cameras and all that, and he was explaining, you know, there where the choke point was, that'd be the best place and all that. Well, everybody that knows me knows that I don't do much of anything in a big hurry. So they were a little ways up ahead of me. And they were all looking off to the right. And I just happened to see a little clearing off to the left. Something didn't look right. So I went and looked at it, trying to figure out what it was that I was seeing from where I was. I got up there and there were 6 footprints. And I broke a stick to length, and I measured each one of them, and they were all just as uniform as you could get. Anyhow, I hollered at them, and they came back and looked it all over. And it was after we found the tracks, after the word kind of got out, the guy that was leasing that land called me and the Swede was still out. Tom and Chico and Fernando was coming in from town, and the cops pulled them over just as they were getting to that land, and informed them they was going to have to clear out, not be out there anymore. And anyhow, Tom and them came down and told us what was going on. We thought it was kind of unusual, kind of odd that, I mean, just after we had found the footprints, and we talked about it that night at the restaurant, but I just that quick after it all took place, here the police was ordering us out, and come to find out the guy that was leasing the land had some other guys coming in right behind us that was trying to capitalize on what we found, which they didn't get done. But other than that, you know, we had a really good it was a good hunt out there. We met a woman named Loretta. Was it Loretta? Yeah. Anyhow, she was just a real, real nice lady. She was a real God-fearing lady. And she told us about her experience. And, you know, doing this stuff, you find some people that are kind of credible. You find people that are totally uncredible. And then you find people like her. That, I mean, if she would have said, you know, give me $1,000 and I'll hold it for you, well, you know, I wouldn't have hesitated for a second. She just came across as so credible that, everything was good up until the time they come and informed us that we couldn't be there anymore. I mean, everything was going our way, but like I say, we came into the restaurant just after we had found those tracks, and we were sitting in the restaurant where we was joined by some other people that were kind of in the same line as us. I won't give out their names, but anyhow, they caught the tail end of the story just enough to get it all figured out, and then here come the police. But the people were just really, really good, gracious people. I mean, they treated us really good.
Yeah. Well, if you want, we can listen to Loretta. She's telling Tom is interviewing her about a week later. And she goes through the whole thing. Here's Loretta.
By the way, we've got an interesting show here. Wow.
Sure do.
You got Loretta from Texas.
Yes, we do.
Super duper. Let's go out there in Texas and talk to Loretta. Loretta, you there?
Hi, yes.
Good evening, dear. Thank you for joining with us tonight.
Well, you're very welcome. Glad to be here.
Now, I think did you get a hold of us when we were out there in Rockwall?
I did. I had heard that you all were in town, and it was kind of late, and I was just like, oh, my gosh, I wish I would have known, and I decided to go hunt y'all down, just like y'all hunt Bigfoot, I hunted y'all down.
Oh, honey, I remember you. Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, yes. You came where we were staying, and the girl called me, and we came out to say hi. And then
yes.
I introduced you to my team. I stood with you for a couple of minutes, and then I let them sit there and listen to the stories, and I guess you guys traded stories that night, right?
Yes, I really enjoyed
it. I'm going to tell you something. This gal had my guys up until after midnight. She's so compelling. Oh, it's so good to hear your voice, Loretta.
It's good to see you. Hear you again, too. It was nice to meet you all that night. I really, my main objective when I went over there is I just thought, you know, I am going to go meet with these guys because it will be just wonderful to tell my story to people who will actually believe me.
Yes, and I've got to tell you something. Now, wasn't that your grandson that I met, and daughter, or son-in-law?
Yes, it was my daughter and my grandson and my son-in-law. And they found you guys at the restaurant. They just happened to be eating there, and they saw your truck. And my grandson, he's 6 years old, and he has just been so enthralled in Bigfoot the last maybe year and a half, 2 years. He's been doing reading on it and watches the TV shows and any documentaries, and he was really excited when he found out that his grandmother had actually had an occasion to see Bigfoot.
You know, I got to tell you a story. I think there was 11 of us having dinner that night, and people kept coming over for autographs and photos, and your grandson was so cute, and in some books and stuff, and he said, "Oh, Mr. Biscardi, Mr. Biscardi." I said, "No, call me Tom." And he stood up on the chair, and we took pictures together. I'll never forget that. And I think I gave him a movie or two.
You did. He's so excited.
Yeah. That is so cool. Listen, I just, so much has transpired since we saw you. But at the same point in time, I want you to tell my audience out there around the globe exactly what happened to you when you had your encounter.
Okay.
You got the stage, girlfriend.
Okay. Well, again, it's really nice to talk to people who actually will take my account and consider it the truth that it is. It happened in 1978, outside of a small town in Indiana, and I was with probably five or six friends, and being from a small town, just kind of driving around looking for things to do. And we drove right outside of town, and there was this old, almost like a mansion to us, but an old house that had been vacant for a long time, and none of us had ever been in it or down there. And we just decided, hey, let's go check it out, right? Let's explore. So we had to walk down this dirt road path, not very wide, probably wide enough for two people to walk down. And there's a tree line all along the side of you. We're probably walking, I'm going to say, a mile to get from where we had to park to the house. And we're just walking down there, and it's still daylight. But as we're coming back, most of my friends chose to go back probably 15 minutes sooner than one friend and I. We decided to stay and continue to explore. So the rest of the gang started to head back. We're probably there another 15, 20 minutes or so, and it's starting to get dark, so we decide, well, we need to head back too. So we start walking down the trail. Now, the trail going back to the car is all tree-lined, but it's all thin trees, thin, tall trees. And so you can't see back there. It's all brush and whatnot. So we're just walking. All of a sudden, we hear this swishing, probably, if I had to guess, it might be 5-6 feet into the brush. And we hear it, but we can't see anybody or see anything, and we're just assuming it's our friends who are trying to now scare us. So we're sitting going, okay, they're going to try to scare us. And so we decide we're going to get to the car before they can actually scare us, and we're going to scare them. So we start to kind of run to the car, but we can hear this breaking of the trees and swishing kind of right alongside us. It's like it's four or five people is what it sounds like, which is the group we were with. And all of a sudden, my shoe's untied, and I have to stop running to tie my shoe. And as I bend down to tie it, that sound just breaks toward to the road that we're on, and it breaks through those trees, and it is just this huge, and it's about twilight now, so it's a little dark. I can't see real well, but it's this huge 6 to 8 foot height, as wide as two big men, just standing there. And I'm literally just frozen. I just can't move. And we just like made eye contact. It's staring at me, and I'm staring at it. And I really can't quite remember what it looked like, I think, because I was so locked into the eyes. But I remember how big it was. I remember it was how dark it was. And it just stood there. And we just stared at each other, it seemed like, for the longest time. And then at some point, my friend just said, "Hey, run." And he grabs my arm, which jogged me out of that frozen state I was in. And we just start running. And the weird thing is, it's like it was very man-like, but at the same time not. I knew that much of it from my conscious mind. Didn't know what it was. And when we got back to the car, there were our friends, and we're kind of getting ready to tell them all about it, and they all just start looking at us like we're crazy. And it was weird. We had like this subconscious meeting of the mind where we just kind of looked at each other. We didn't say another word, and we never talked about it again. And it was like I saw him every day at school, and it was just one of those surreal, weird moments that you never, ever forget. There's like we just never, ever mentioned it again. What was that? You know, and again, we had no idea what Bigfoot was, never heard of a Bigfoot, and so just that was just something I never mentioned to anybody. And then years later, you know, I moved to Texas, and I'm raising my kids, and now it's in the 80s, I don't know, 85, 86, and all of a sudden you get all these documentaries and people talking around the world about experiences they've had seeing Bigfoot. And as I'm watching these, it seems like that they've had my experience. The way that, you know, I wasn't afraid of this Bigfoot or this thing that was standing in front of me. I didn't really feel fearful, like it was going to come at me and grab me or do anything to me. I was just astounded at what it was and how big it was. And that, you know, it's just kind of that thing where they stare at you and people talk about it and they talk about the height. And I just thought, you know, their experience sounds a lot like mine. And so I just thought, you know, I must have seen a Bigfoot because I knew it wasn't a bear. I knew it wasn't a man. I knew what it wasn't. I just didn't know what it was.
Well, let me, she dialed back down. Let me just pick up with her.
Yeah.
I was going to tell her, you know, welcome to the world of Sasquatch, ladies and gentlemen. She's had one of the most prime examples of an encounter that so many of us have throughout the years.
And here we are. So TJ
wow.
And Rocky.
Yeah. That, you know, them person encounters are the best, you know, where you actually get to see one. And just like myself, you know, I wasn't a believer. Well, I was, but I wasn't. And then I became a believer again, you know, back in 2006. And now, it stunned how me. She said she wasn't fearful. I mean, when I ran out after mine, thinking it was a man in a suit, there was no fear. And then when I got out there and realized it couldn't have been a guy in a suit, I was more fearful that I was stupid than what it might have done to me. And how my dad would have explained to my wife that, well, he went running after a guy in a suit and it wasn't, and it picked him up and took them somewhere, you know? It's just, oh, amazing. It's amazing.
I know.
Well, you know, expedition's coming up on us here. We're going to be hitting 13 states. Marco talked about in the very beginning. Guys, listen up. We're going to every Wednesday chime in and let you know what's happening. You can follow us on our Facebook page, searchingforbigfoot.com. Also, we'll post stuff up there so you guys know what's going on, so you can experience how we're doing it, what we're doing, and what we're seeing. To the best of our ability. You know, just make sure you give us calls if you have an experience you want to share it with us. We're going to most likely be near you wherever you are. So we'd love to come by and meet you, say hi, you know, break a little bread, listen to your stories, and, you know, hopefully go out and do a little research with you. Help, we'll come out and help justify what you may saw if you would have been a little bit worried like Loretta was.
Well, you guys are right now keeping pretty busy on the road there, I'm sure.
Yeah,
and,
you know, we're almost going to be to Phoenix tomorrow. Tomorrow, about noon, we'll be in Phoenix. And from there, we're going to go to New Hampshire.
Yeah, well, people don't understand is what's very difficult to understand is when the SFBI team goes, it goes. And it's not like you stop overnight and stay at a hotel and in the motel, and it's like drive straight through, sleep a couple hours, take turns driving. I mean, it's just you're constantly on the move. And then when you get to the place where you're at, you think, oh, yeah, well, time to take a little bit of rest before we go out and do things. Nope. You
go take
time. Unload the truck. Let's get everything ready. Let's go out there and prepare the place. Get it all ready for an encounter. And you got to go out and prepare it.
We plan these out, Marco. We plan them out as best as we can. We give ourselves a couple days drive time in between, depending on where we're at. And,
6 days in field work when we're there. But this is Bigfoot, and things change. And as we're moving down the road, we may get a call, and we might have to turn around, backtrack 100 miles because it was just a class one visual sighting, and it just happened, you know. And you want to stay on the fresh ones as much as you can. So,
absolutely.
I mean, real researchers understand, armchair quarterbacks don't. They'll sit on the Facebook and the internet, and they'll talk about us, and, you know, naysay us. But, you know, we don't worry about them no more. We've made mainstream. We're traded on the you know, in the stock market.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they say, well, how come you didn't take a picture? And what they don't really understand is, if you're out there and you have this 9-foot creature standing in front of you, I mean, first of all, even if you had a camera.
You know, we'd have to have it constantly running at all times, and it would have to be, you know, hard enough, your batteries are probably out by the time the creature's up. People don't realize you're going to pull a cell phone out of your pocket, get the camera going, the creature's gone. You know,
right, yeah.
I'm not out to prove to anybody else, either or anybody else on our team. We're going to make sure we want to prove to the world, and when we have the proof, we'll show it.
Yeah,
The last time we went out, I can't even remember what state we was in. We had the police out there that was stopping everybody and checking driver's license and all that.
North Carolina.
Okay. Well, the cops stopped us and come over there and was asking me, you know, I had to show him my driver's license and registration and all that. And they sat back and they looked at the Searching for Bigfoot Incorporated sign on the side of my truck. And then he was kind of curious about it. But he said, what are y'all going to do if you find him? And Tommy was just, you know, shining him on. He said, well, we'll probably get a selfie with him. And the cop looked at him and said, sir, I don't have a sense of humor.
That's right.
He just has a sense of humor at all.
Yep. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Well, you know, talking about the drive time and all that, I left my house. I set my odometer at zero. And when we got we did our trip, when we got back, I checked my speedometer as I was pulling into my driveway. I drove 4,970 miles exactly.
Yep.
And Tommy drove that distance plus the trip from California and back. So if you want to talk about road time, the boys are on the road all the time.
Yep, that's the truth. Well, look, it's getting close to that time. Make sure everybody understands that we're on expedition. Give us a call at those numbers Marco Bill put out. We're going to be in the truck. We'll answer your phone call. We'll come out and see you if we're close. Hey. This is expedition season, and Searching for Bigfoot's coming out to hope possibly see you and help you. Just remember that.
And, Tommy, it's time to say goodbye. We're going to see everybody next week.
Folks, we'll see you next Wednesday at 7.
Yeah, yeah. Keep your Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. Take care now.
There you go, Miss Calabash, wherever y'all are.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pact that they hold and a promise till the day that they die. answers to the questions no one found before. Driving the train of the nation, the only key they had to unlock the door.